Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Half a minute, no timeouts. Daniels throws down the sideline for Terry McLaurin. McLaurin is loose. Lightning strikes twice in Washington.
You kidding me? What a dream. The pipes of Joe Davis on a miraculous Terry McLaurin touchdown.
They'd gone to win that game for true, wouldn't they? That was the comeback they needed. That was the spark. That was the sign of life, I tell you.
Washington's building a foundation for success on and off the field this season. It's time for you to plan for your future as well. Our sponsor will help, Kondori and Murrah. The law firm is going to help you update your last will and testament, set up a trust for you and your family, schedule a consultation. It is free. You can do that with their estate planning attorneys today. Visit kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. Let us be among the first to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving this week. Little lay of the land ahead. We will be here through Wednesday as a show, I believe. Is that correct?
I think that's right.
I think we're here through Wednesday.
Darius said yes.
We will not
it just
be here.
Says Thanksgiving.
We're not going to be here on Thursday. So next 3 days, you've got us breaking down all things Commanders and National Football League. On Wednesday, we will do our annual exclusive Grant and Danny Thanksgiving draft.
Thanksgiving.
Right here on 106.7 The Fan. Who will end up with the number one pick? Who will get the items that we fight over year in and year out?
Mm-hmm.
Mashed potatoes, macaroni and cheese, stuffing. Will Ryan have another absolutely horrific draft?
Great in round one.
These are the questions that need to be answered. The annual Thanksgiving draft is just 2 short days away, Danny.
I look forward to it all year long because it really means that Thanksgiving is here.
We need to get CK to do a serious like production for it where he's like, in just 2 more days. Big voice guy, you know, and it's like airs all over the station. Like, Grant, Danny, Darius, and Ryan put their boards to the test. You just hear like past like picks and booing from the crowd.
There's like huge reactions. Kuiper, cranberry sauce obviously moving itself into the first round potentially with some upside, not the canned stuff, the homemade, you know.
Who will reach on turkey? And then it's like Darius, like, I'm going to go turkey. And we're all like, no. Will Ryan take gravy in round one again?
You guys sleep on gravy.
And then it's just like all of us screaming at him. 2 more days. It's happening. The Thanksgiving draft.
Which casserole will he take this time? It's a lot. He loves takes some sort of casserole.
How many casseroles will he take? I mean, last year, I think he had like 6 casseroles.
He had gravy and 3 casseroles.
Because I traded. It was the Ricky Williams draft for me. I traded all of my picks to go up, and I was a little light on everything else.
But well, that's for the Super Bowl. You ended up with wings and like true. and solo cups.
It's not. It's kind of the move. I want what I want. Yeah. I'll go lesser items. Mm-hmm. I'll go up the board to get what I need to get. I'm an aggressive draft day executive. What was the guy? Is it Sonny Weaver? What was the name of
in draft day? Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin Costner.
That is correct.
In draft day. Is it Sonny Weaver? He was big on the trading situations. All right. Before we get back to the phones, last week we talked a lot about the Kingsbury cliff, right? Not Cliff Kingsbury, but the cliff that oftentimes his teams fall off of going into the second half of the season. Their offense yesterday, Danny, for 3 quarters basically reverted to, hey, Jaden, run for some yards. And while he's explosive and he can be prolific, that's the opposite of what you're looking for. Didn't it feel like Tampa a little bit?
100%.
They can't throw the ball.
Was that one drive where he 3 times escaped to the right and went out of bounds for -1, 0, and +1?
That was brutal.
And you go, oh my God, there's nothing here.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
Go make a play for us, kid. Now, if you look at historical data from his time as the head coach of the Cardinals, and it's not just the record at Texas Tech or the record at Arizona, which people will use to dismiss, oh, that doesn't mean offense. The information is there. The numbers are there. I saw Neil Greenberg today tweet out EPA per play per season. the numbers fall off. Every year he was a coach in Arizona. We had just on Friday while we were out and about, and we had a great show, by the way, in Falls Church at the Casual Pine.
Place is awesome. That was fun.
They were cool. But we had Ted Wynn of The Athletic on the show, and he pointed out weeks 1 through 8 points per drive. If you look at Cliff Kingsbury's history, 6th, 10th in the first 6 weeks of the season. The 8 through 17 weeks, 20th and 24th. And some people will say, well, Kyler Murray got hurt or he was playing banged up. Kind of like Jaden Daniels. Almost like there's a trend, by the way, where you have a running quarterback and they run all over the place and then they get banged up because they're short in Kyler Murray's case, or, you know, they're not big in Jaden Daniels' case. Almost like that should be part of the conversation and not just the reason that you dismiss the information. But we're seeing it again, and I guess the question is, how concerned should we be?
Very. Because you've got historical data. This isn't just out of nowhere. So when you've got no precedent for something, you go, like a 300 lifetime hitter going 2 for 40 in a month, you go, well, I got some pretty good precedent that the back of the baseball card says he'll get hot at some point and he'll get to his numbers or close to it. Well, this is what the back of the baseball card says. The second halves are a lot worse than the first halves. Now, somebody could tell you exactly why, who, you know, breaks down and studies film and has watched tape of every Arizona player, Texas Tech player, this one and that one. I'm not smart enough to tell you all the sophisticated reasons why it happens, but watch. You guys saw the game too, right? Doesn't it look like there aren't many places to go with the football? Doesn't it look like they've kind of been found out? Doesn't it look like teams anticipate what they're going to do or want to do or how they want to do it before Washington even has a chance to get going? Doesn't it look like it's basically, hey, kid, put the Superman cape on and figure it out time after time? It looks like there's a solve that's happened. And usually the way to me to counteract that, because listen, all these defensive coordinators for everybody have a pretty good idea by now of who you are and what you want to do. You may surprise them with a trick play here or misdirection there or something that wasn't in the playbook early on in the season. But to me, the way you counter it is with badasses. You could do whatever you want to A.J. Brown. I'd still throw him the football. Bet you he comes through with it. You could do whatever you want to CeeDee Lamb. Bet you he comes through. I don't think they have that. And so there's no counter right now in terms of just a playmaker that's going to run roughshod over people. The schemed up, wide open stuff just isn't there right now. And it looks like defenses have the answer key.
Yeah, I think that's important because it's fair to say we knew before the year, we knew early in the year that their personnel just standalone is not elite or top half the league. Noah Brown was the 4th or 5th receiver in Houston or whatever that they cut, and he comes here and he becomes the number two. Having said that, they had no problem being the number one offense in the National Football League through several weeks with the exact same group of guys. So you were ahead of defenses with this same group. Now you seem to be behind them. And to your point, the easy stuff is not available. And you mentioned just, you know, getting guys free and getting guys real estate and separation. I don't even mean that. I just mean the quick game has kind of gone away. I think teams are playing a little tighter on the outside, perhaps, and they're giving you fewer of the layup throws that you were taking early mm-hmm. in the year and kind of forcing you into some smaller window, more difficult things. And Kingsbury's got to answer. But it's, you know, the passing game is multifaceted. And I also see the issues in protection. Again, they're not giving up pressures at a higher rate. The numbers, according to PFF, on dropbacks in the first several weeks of the season, Jaden Daniels was pressured 35% of the time. In the last 5 games, it's 32%. So it's actually gone down just a hair. But the pressure is way more often now coming from the interior, which is harder to deal with. When the pressure comes from the edge, he's able to beat you in a foot race out of the pocket. Think about this with me. When a edge rusher comes and he sees him coming, Jake, how many times did we see that? The Browns play,
yep.
You can name 15, 20 times where he just escapes out the back door and he either throws or throws it away or goes and scrambles for 5 or 7 yards or whatever. He was doing that the entire first half of the season. Well, when the pressure comes straight at you, you kind of move now into potentially rushers. You don't navigate the pocket as cleanly. You move backwards rather than out of the pocket, and you don't get that same speed, and things can get messy and gross around you pretty quickly, right? So I think that's part of this. The Cowboys knew how they were going to defend, you know, their pass rush, how they were going to block them yesterday. They're going to chip with their tight ends. They're going to chip on the edges. They're going to chip at Micah. You know what they did? They moved Micah Parsons over top of the center. They let him rush from the interior, and it worked. A couple of sacks for him yesterday. And then you look at the running game. Where's the answers in the running game? That's where we heap the most praise on Kingsbury and the analysts that we would have on, like Dan Orlovsky and some of these guys, you know, that were just blown away by They're like, look at this, guys. I just went over the film. They had 10 different runs on two drives, you know, that were basically six different plays out of eight different looks and blah, 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 blah. Where is that? First 4 weeks, their running backs averaged, the first 8 weeks, their running backs, Danny, averaged 5.2 per play. The last 4 weeks, 3.5. So every part of this offense is regressing, including the play of Jaden Daniels. And you blame some of that on the coordinator if you want to as well. The same way when Daniels was playing like an MVP and rookie of the year early, we're saying Cliff Kingsbury is going to be a head coach. He was getting a lot of the credit.
Yeah.
Well, he deserves some of the blame now. And we can have a Daniels conversation if you want to. I think that's fair and we should. Nobody's above reproach here. But if Kingsbury gets the credit when he's balling, I think there's got to be some, hey, man, your kid's struggling. Let's make it a little easier
on him. Yeah, and again, there's plenty of nuance to it. We always end up, you know, focusing on one part, and we are for this discussion, and I think that's fair to your point. I think that's the right thing to do. However, I would say, if you on the play sheet 2 months ago called, whatever you want to call it, Brian Robinson runs off of right guard with a you know, the pulling left guard in the hole, and it went for 5 yards 2 months ago, and now it's going for one, that's not all on you. You know, maybe things aren't being blocked as well. Maybe guys are worn down. Maybe there's a million different reasons why a play was made now that wasn't made a couple months ago against you. Because other guys get paid to play too. But when you add up his entire career, and this, by the way, goes back to college. This is to me, irrelevant data points. There is no time in his history of him as a coach where his teams played better in the second half of the year than they did in the first. Record-wise, offensive number-wise, I can't get exact data for all the years at Texas Tech or even at USC. Remember, they started 6-1, finished 8-5 down the stretch, and the offense wasn't the same the second half of the year, you know, as of a couple seasons ago. The same thing happened in Arizona. I know there are mitigating factors. You mentioned Kyler Murray's injury or injuries to other players. I understand all that. That's the NFL. It can't be this big of a drop-off, is my point. You can't go from the best offense in the sport, ringing the bell whenever the hell you want to, can't move the football against a bad defense. I understand you're not going to put up 38 a week. They had that 3-week stretch where they scored 38, 42, 36, and they averaged 38 points per week. I'm an adult human being. I understand you cannot average that. This is not arena football, okay? My point is, you can't go from that to they're one of the worst offenses in the sport for 55 minutes yesterday against a bad defense. There's got to be a happy middle there. There's got to be something better than falling down every single rung of the ladder and hitting your head Looney Tunes style on each one when you get down there. Settle on the team somewhere. Move the football a couple times and score some points in the first half against a crappy defense looking to quit like Dallas.
Ian Harditz, who's a fantasy guy that I follow, tweeted this out. It's the points per game and yards per game by month in Cliff Kingsbury's career. So as a play caller, offensive mind, mm-hmm. what have you, in the NFL only. Points per game in September, 26, October, 27, November, 23, December, and on, 20. Falls off by a touchdown.
That is basically Tony Stark right there.
All right. Yards per game, September, 377, October, 380, November, 336, December, and on, 329. So we're talking about basically 50 fewer yards and 6 fewer points per game from the first month of the year to the last month of the year in his career.
Man.
I'm sorry. That's you just can't tell me it's nothing. And maybe it would just be explainable away as a head coach, it was different. Arizona's a different thing. But it's literally happening here in front of our eyes. And I wasn't willing to go deep into the conversation when they were just playing really good defenses because that was a convenient way to kind of say they're slowing down when, yeah, of course they're going to slow down. As you said, they were doing something that wasn't going to sustain, and now they're playing great defenses. But yesterday was a major tell. And it wasn't their first time they struggled against a defense that wasn't very good, but it was the most obvious realization that something is very much not right. And frankly, you know, it's now almost half and half of the year, if you look at it,
yeah.
Really. Where the seventh game was the Carolina game, I think. So like the six games before that, and then you take that one out because it was, you know, no Jaden Daniels, whatever. But the five after, you're talking about 7-5. It's not like it's been a couple of games here. Let's go to Nick and Bowie on Grant and Danny. What's up, Nick?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, we appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Of course.
Jim Zorn, do you have anything to say about that?
Is anyone else?
Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray!
The one thing I love about Jim Zorn is how long he takes to greet people. You know, he really doesn't want to do it. He's very reluctant.
He's like, I want the buildup. I want there to be anticipation.
I like that he just never greets them right away.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Nick. How are you, buddy?
He wants to make sure that it's you know, feeling it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, honestly, I just based on this most recent conversation, yeah, I mean, we all know how important it is to make the defense unsure to start a game. And yet it seems like we're coming in and we're running up the gut on first and second and then obvious passing down on third. Or we're passing the ball at or behind the line of scrimmage. And it just does feel like we haven't really evolved. I mean, there's no less motion that defenses have to account for. I mean, we have a dynamic quarterback. Where are the jet sweeps that allow Jaden to pull it and run when he wants to? Where are the quick slants to Terry? I mean, we heard on the broadcast, they were talking about how the scheme forces Terry to line up on the same side consistently when they decide to go no huddle. And, I mean, if they can see that, other teams can see that. And that's getting Terry fewer looks. What is Kingsbury doing?
I mean, so that's a great point, by the way, you. Nick. Sorry to cut you off. I want to talk about McLaurin with you, Danny, because if we're having this Cliff Kingsbury conversation, okay, Terry McLaurin was utterly uninvolved again yesterday.
4 catches for 16 yards before the play.
The 86-yard miracle that basically was just a Cowboys meltdown,
mm-hmm.
respectfully.
Yeah.
I mean, wide open, 8 guys dropped, nobody touched him. And there was a little bit of Terry being awesome and speedy and kind of navigating traffic well, but that was not really an offensive play. That was a, oh my God, this is the worst defense I've ever seen kind of play. So it'll go down as 5 for 102 and a touchdown. But compare him to the other leading receivers in the league in terms of target share and usage. It's just not the same. He has not had, these are his targets, not his catches, his targets in the last 4 games. 3, 6, 2, 6. They were coming off of a 1-catch, 10-yard game for McLaurin where Cliff said in the press conference, that can't happen, we need to get him more involved. And he had 4 for 16 going into the final 5 minutes. And there wasn't a single screen thrown to him in the game. I don't remember, like, there was the one slant out of halftime where they clearly said, hey, we got to throw Terry the football. Let's get him a quick slant. But they didn't do that early. That wasn't an emphasis in the first quarter. Forget all the other speculation that Cliff's offense gets solved in the second half of the year. This is just easy money stuff. Are you trying to throw your best football player on offense the ball, yes or no? And the answer the last few weeks, way too often, has been not enough.
And again, I don't care about that if your offense is humming.
Well, of course.
My objection for so many years with Scott Turner, Bieniemy, or whoever was doing or not doing in this case was, your offense sucks. If my offense is going to suck, I'm going to be bad going down with this burning ship, getting the football to my best player way more often than you guys. And they were just sort of content to try their plan or whatever. When your offense is not going, maybe that's how you get it going. It's just a different philosophy. I could never live with it. I could never live with a game like that Philadelphia game on Thursday night where there's no targets until deep into the fourth quarter for my best football player on offense. I'm not wired that way. These guys are, and that's fine. But, well, maybe it's not fine in this case. It's just an objection that I will never get over.
800-636-1067. Are you concerned about Cliff Kingsbury's offense in the second half of this season? Last week, it felt like a lot of people were still pushing back and suggesting it was an overreaction. Do you still feel that way after a bad defense had a good plan? Not the Steelers, not the Eagles, a really bad defense put together a plan that had Washington at 3 points at halftime and sitting at 3 points going into the final 5 minutes and 9 points going into the final 5 minutes and 16 seconds of that ball game. No, you know what? I was right the first time. Washington, Danny, had 9 points as of the mid-third quarter mm-hmm. and didn't get over 10 until 3:02 on the clock with that 4-yard pass to Ertz.
Yeah, they had about half of their yards in the game in the last 5 minutes of the game.
They had 92 net passing after 54 and a half minutes. And then they had like a Santana Moss miracle
yes.
Cowboys game that they still couldn't win because the special teams was just a fiasco.
And then there's that.
Grant and Danny with you on the Fan.
I mean, like I said earlier, defensive coordinators look at, man, what teams had success against them, and how could they incorporate that into their scheme. So you start to see a little bit of trends, and you know, you kind of watch film, but you got to be able to adjust on the fly. And I think we're able to adjust on the fly, but we didn't do it early enough. And, you know, that starts up, man, me seeing it, the receiver seeing it, everybody seeing it all as a one accord.
That was Jaden Daniels yesterday. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. So Daniels' stat line in the end yesterday was actually tremendous. 25 of 38 for 275 and a couple of touchdowns. The two interceptions end up making it not as good, but obviously the first pick hit off Brian Robinson's hand, and the second one was a Hail Mary. I would say, though, the first pick was like a turnover-worthy play in a sense. Probably not graded that way via PFF because it hit the intended guy in the hands. But it was a bad decision, in my opinion. It's a screen. He throws a flat, fast, basically a fastball to a non-pass-catching running back. I mean, a guy who's okay at it, but it's not the guy that normally runs the screens for them. And the best-case scenario is he gets tackled for a loss, and that should just be burned at his feet. I think a veteran quarterback probably would have done just that. And frankly, Daniels did that early in the year.
Yes.
More often than not, might do the same thing. So I guess I would give him like half of one interception or, you know, a quarter of one interception
right.
in the game or something like that instead of two. But I say that only to then say, Danny, that is not really indicative in any way of his performance, right? I mean, you just go through if you're PFF or if you're a coach and you grade every play that he ran. And you go, okay, this was pretty good. Wow, this was really good. I like this. And time and temperature and, you know, all these things don't matter as much. He finished the game, by my count, 13 of 13 passing on those final three drives. So the one where they go get the touchdown with 5 minutes left, down to 3 minutes left, where they go right down the field. Completion of McLaurin for 0, Brown for 11, Brown for 19, Brown for 20. That was Diami. It was a great catch, by the way. Luke McCaffrey for 8, Ertz for 7, Ertz for 4, touchdown. On that drive, he was 7 of 7 for 70 yards. Then the next drive, Ertz for 2, Ertz for 2, Ertz for 13, or Eckler for 2, and then Ertz and Ertz for 18, right? Then he had the throw to John Bates that was caught and fumbled. Then he had the 76 to McLaurin. It's like he finished the game with 14 of 14, 13 of 13, whatever it was, and like another, you throw on another almost 200 passing yards to his total. That completely changes what was 55 minutes of what we all saw.
Yeah.
He is just not the same still. And the rib is not a thing anymore. I'm sorry. It just can't be used as an excuse after yesterday.
No. So, yeah, I don't think yesterday was rib-related at all. Previously, I do, because I didn't see those bad habits, those spin-away throws, those leaving things short, not stepping into stuff. To me, he looked like the athletic, comfortable, fluid Jaden Daniels. Now we're just not hitting passes. I think, and to me, a lot of this is, again, what's going on with Kingsbury and this offense. And guys not being that open related more than it is, you know, than him all of a sudden becoming inaccurate, all of a sudden becoming indecisive or unsure. You know, some of a regression was normal there for any rookie who got out to the start that he did, like gangbusters. Again, you do what you did every week. You're an MVP candidate as a rookie, which very rarely happens. So this is some of it's normal, but a lot of it to me is there aren't a lot of great options for him to go with the football in a lot of those, you know, third and sevens, third and nines that they're facing a lot more now than they were, say, a month ago.
This was the Daniels presser yesterday after the game.
As the year's gone on, do you see any difference in tendency or anything in how teams are defending you? And do you view the last 3 weeks offensively kind of as a collective, or is it just game by game for you?
I think teams and coordinators are going to see what other teams have success against them and try to figure out how they could incorporate that into their scheme. So, I mean, you kind of see stuff on third downs. You know, we've been in third and longers a lot, you know, these past couple games. So that's kind of where you get into those exotic pressures and stuff like that. And, you know, we just got to be better on first and second down to stay ahead of the chains.
That's Jaden Daniels post game yesterday. But he's acknowledging we're seeing some looks that we didn't see. They're trying to trick us on third down. He's, I believe, 7 for his last 23 passing on third down. The question really is more largely about the offense than just Daniels. That's a byproduct of what has been now a unit that has regressed pretty substantially through 3 weeks. It meshes with the concern that we had as of weeks ago when we suggested There is this track record of these Kingsbury offenses that start out like gangbusters and then crash back down to earth, and we're kind of seeing that here. Pete's in Jersey listening on the Odyssey app. What's up, Pete?
Hey, what's going on, man? I'll tell you what, yesterday's game killed me. I feel like all the defenses, they figure out Kingsbury all the time. Second half of the seasons, even in college or the pros, you called it, they figure him out. On top of that, wide receiver-wise, and I love Terry, we all love Terry, but when you got Brown, and Zacchaeus, I mean, this is something that has to be addressed in the offseason.
No question.
1,000%.
Yeah, no question. Appreciate the phone call, my friend. Yeah, I'm not patting myself on the back here because I've been wrong a million percent of the time, but the roster looked to just a Rube like me before the season started. I go, are we sure about this O-line? And they could have used another receiver somewhere opposite Terry McLaurin, maybe just a threat, whatever. It's now kind of coming home to roost. It didn't matter against Carolina or Cleveland or Arizona or the teams that they're just doing whatever the hell they wanted to. Guys are wide open. Jaden Daniels is high flying. He's the rookie of the year. He's an MVP candidate. Everything is great. On some of these third and sevens, I think the caller's right. The MO is pretty simple. You take away the short stuff and dare them. Dare them to beat you, which is not what most teams are doing in the NFL right now. Most teams are doing, frankly, what Washington has done for most of the season, which is you're so terrified of getting beat deep, you're playing soft shells, and you give up some stuff. Now, maybe Marshawn Lattimore coming back is going to help with some of that on Washington's defensive side. But offensively, you need some guys that can win on these third and longs, and that's not happening right now.
Yeah. So there's no denying that they're going to need another weapon. They lack speed on offense a little bit, and they lack like some wiggle at wide receiver, it would feel like to me. And they're going to continue to work on the O-line, which has mostly been a strength, but the last couple of weeks on the interior, you know, teams have found a way to get to the quarterback, which was something we weren't talking about early in the season. But I think they would say to you, like you're talking about, oh, they need this, they need that, they need this. They're 7-5. They're currently in the playoffs, and they have the number 7 ranked offense in the league, and they're the number 7 ranked passing offense in the league. So, yes, do they need more to beat Baltimore and Philly and Pittsburgh? For sure. And yesterday they had a terrible game. In year one of a program, you're going to have some of those,
sure.
And you're not going to fix everything in one offseason, which is not to say I disagree with you. But rather than trying to assume that they could fix everything in one offseason, they probably have a pretty good feel that a starting wide receiver who they grabbed off the scrap heap on, you know, the first week of the year, and Noah Brown, who got cut by the Texans, probably is a tell that they might need someone who's a little bit more explosive. Let's go to Eric in Kansas City, home of the Chiefs. What's up, Eric? How are you?
No. No home of the Chiefs. I love one team, and I love one team for 43 years, and I'm glad to talk to somebody out in that area.
I love it. Well, we're happy to have you. I'm glad. It would have been really easy for you to watch a really good Chiefs team.
You could just quietly shift it over. No one would have blamed you, man. You just wake up in the AFC title game every year.
Bros, we may not even get to my point. I'm glad to talk to y'all. But I will tell y'all this. Nobody knows me from obviously, but, yeah, I'm a huge, huge fan of Washington. And I try not to stick no negatives. I'm more grateful today, and here's why. All right, I know this ain't gonna make nobody feel better, and I'm not trying to do that. Where was we last year? I think we lost over 10 straight last year. 3-game losing streak this year to me is a compliment, and here's why. For one, we're not out of the race at all. For two, we got the 7 wins quick. For three, our season, man, is still alive. I know it's adversity. Cliff Kingsbury, I hear about how his offense drops off and stuff, and that could be true. But to me, not only the players, but them coaches that they brought in here, to me, against Tennessee is now – or we get ready for next year. That's just how I feel. But if they beat Tennessee, I'm not counting them out from running the table.
Love it.
But I can't see them running the table, but I do feel like a lot of people will agree with that. If they beat the Titans, there's going to be an expectation at 8-5 going into your bye week that you're going to find a way to make the playoffs at 10 wins, maybe.
Yeah, you've harvested enough nuts.
If they lose to the Titans at that point, it feels like this is just a complete collapse and free fall. And at that point, all bets are off.
But also, to his larger point, I think we can spin both plates. It goes without saying when we're having specific conversations about yesterday's game and maybe trends over the last month. But big picture, if you're not really happy with the fact that ownership seems competent, there's a general manager that's got a pretty good feel for things, they're doing things the right way, they're building something. Yeah, the results may be disappointing week to week, but it's now there's a point to all this, whereas there wasn't before when Bruce was in charge or some other kind of overmatch boob that was here for way too long, right? Big picture, of course we're happy. Of course we are. It's just frustrating given the fact that they were 7-2 16 days ago, and now they're the opposite of that. You know, now they've having dropped three straight, and it ain't trending in the right direction.
Let's go to Zeke in D.C. I loved your fumble yesterday. I wish that Washington would have recovered it. How are you? Zeke, are you there? You'll get nothing.
Whoa.
I hear like moaning
a little
bit.
Did he burp once?
You realize you're on the radio, no?
Okay, good talk. See you out there.
We're having a weird day. The calls we're taking when people speak are pretty good. But it's the occasional not answering that gets to me some. Mm-hmm. It's okay. There's occasional mulligans. I get that. Double play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. We do have a Beltway Blitz coming your way at 4 o'clock. Next hour, who had the worst day? It's got to be Austin Seibert, right? But you could throw Dan Quinn or Kingsbury or Daniels or maybe Benjamin St. Juice into that conversation. We got Jay Gruden joining us in an hour and 20 minutes at 5 o'clock, the Monday after the worst loss of the season, the worst day of the Dan Quinn era to this point. You just can't do that. And oh, by the way, against the Cowboys of all teams. Like if that was Cleveland or Carolina or Tennessee or something, that's one thing. It was Dallas, man. Makes it sting that much more. You're listening to The Fan. Was watching Sunday Night Football last night as Saquon Barkley put on an absolute show. He ran for 255 for the Eagles against the Rams. He's now on pace, Danny, for almost 2,200 rushing yards. The all-time record is held by Eric Dickerson with 2,105. Barkley's on pace for over 2,150. He could break the all-time rushing record. And it's just different when you watch him. Like, I'm not convinced, by the way, with another season of a bunch of injuries for Brian Robinson, who I love the guy, but he's always banged up. Always. And I don't know how his leg didn't snap yesterday or he didn't. That looked like an Alex Smith kind of broken leg initially when he got folded up or maybe a knee or something. To his credit, he's tough as nails. Mm-hmm. But I think running back could actually be a need for them, as odd as that sounds. Like, watch the league. When you're not watching Washington, watch other teams. His home run this year of like 40 yards, he got caught from behind and tackled. He didn't score a touchdown when it was like blocked perfectly. And it's going to sound like I'm knocking B-Robin. That's not my intention. But I know there's not Barkley's to be had. They don't grow on trees. But dude, the difference between the elite back, the home run hitter, and what they have is pretty stark. And if they're going to be this run-first operation, and they should be with Jaden Daniels and the dual threat read option stuff they want to do, then do the Lamar Derrick Henry thing, do the Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley thing, and go get yourself a baller at running back and play that game. Because as I'm watching last night, I'm going, Jalen Hurts is just okay, and it doesn't matter. It has never mattered all year. They've lost twice. He doesn't have to be all that good. He makes a couple of big plays with his legs every week, and that's the answer, basically, because Barkley is their best player. But that might be something they should consider, too. You know, whether it's in, you'd hate this, but like if Ashton Jeanty, that kid from Boise State, is available at like 24 in the draft or 21 or something, I know a first round running back would make everyone want to jump off of a building.
Oh, I would find the highest one.
I'm just telling you.
I would lose it.
I would think of like a weapon at that position, which they haven't had a home run hitter there in a while, is not the worst idea. But anyway, Barkley's a beast.
No, he's incredible. So I actually am in favor of that, believe it or not. Not spending a high pick. I think that's always a mistake. Even when it works, I think it's the wrong
course. I think it's a mistake when it's not like Jahmyr Gibbs or someone that's or Saquon Barkley, by the way, who is a top five pick. You know, he makes the Eagles look pretty good right now.
But I do think what we've had is such an overcorrection in the market that you can get great value on someone like that. That's good value for Saquon Barkley. It's like what the Nats did with Howie Kendrick, for example. I'd rather have a 21-year-old at the league minimum. Actually, this undervalued guy with playoff at-bats and a pretty good career is going to end up with some big hits for us. We'll spend a little bit on that guy. That's actually a better value. It's so overcorrected that there is value in a Derrick Henry and a Saquon Barkley, the guys that are exceptions to the rule. But again, I think it's always a mistake to do a first-round pick. The thing that I would do...
So you'd be furious if they picked, let's say, at 22 and they took Genty.
Livid. Beyond livid. I'd scream and I'd say I'll root for the next regime.
Give me weapons.
The thing that you should do, though, and this is my philosophy every year, no matter how many times guys come out of nowhere and are good, fourth round and on. That's when you should be flooding the zone every year with finding that guy, finding the Kyren Williamses of the world or the Pachecos of the world. You just keep throwing stuff at the wall, and a guy finds the right place, right system, right scheme, and gets hot for a couple years, becomes a must-have fantasy player.
Yeah, that's the way to do it as well. But Adrian Peterson went 7th overall.
Yes, he did.
The Vikings didn't regret it, right? I'd say that about Barkley, best player in his organization every year with the Giants and now on to Philly. Jahmyr Gibbs, you think the Lions would go back and redo that? I don't think they would. If you're, what do you want to be? What kind of team are you? And the way that this thing's trending, you know, Brian Robinson's hurt every time he comes back again. And then it's a big deal. Like, look at the difference when he's on the field and when he's not on the field. And even with him, they're just a physical bowling ball team. But you know, they're not ripping off the big gains unless Daniels is finding 20 around the edge. Let's get to our double play, driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealer. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today.
Uh-oh. We had a debut here over the weekend, Jeeps. The debut of Coach Danny Ruye coaching indoor soccer for the first time. Wow. I've coached soccer before for many years. Coached a lot of sports for a number of years.
Very
have some
qualified.
Experience there. Yeah, yeah, I would say among the group of parents, does anyone want to do it? I guess I will, and that's how I got the job. Lengthy interview process. I want to thank everybody, the board and the GM, for the chance to do it. And UGLY on this one. I don't know if we're the wrong age group. I don't know what I don't know here, but our boys got sandblasted.
Wait, I must have misread that text. When you sent that text, I was super busy.
Yeah.
But I looked down, I didn't respond. I thought you said you were up 8-0.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, no, sir.
So it was not a good weekend.
No, it was not.
Oh, man.
It was
I
not.
I thought Danny Huhe was going to go to that press conference shucking and jiving, wearing the wrong shirt with the feathers coming from the, you know, the old logo
sure.
or whatever.
Well, now, the text I sent you was from my oldest game in a tournament. Which I had nothing to do with. I'm just a transportation service, and I cheer for them on the sidelines. They lost to a Maryland team with the most annoying fans on the planet. So I hope those people get gout and athlete's foot and are miserable.
Parent drama.
They stink. Those people were so annoying. Anyway, but for my son's game that I coached, oh, did we get creamed?
Did we make some adjustments?
Well,
what I said about
we tried.
You is the second half of your coaching career. There's always a cliff that you fall off.
Yeah, every time. Yeah. So second half was better than the first half because they figured out, none of these kids have ever played indoor soccer before. It's in this little, like, you know, tiny field, and every other kid on the other team, it looked like they'd done it before. They were much better than we were. They were going to win the game regardless. They were more physical, faster, better skilled. They kicked our butts. But our guys, you know, there were some tough plays made. They figured out how to be goalie. They'd never been a goalie in any of their leagues before.
Love that.
Elliot made a bunch of saves. Kids played hard and... You know, there were only a couple sets of tears throughout,
okay.
So we did okay.
What'd you wear? Did you go full suit?
No.
Did we go Tom Landry top hat?
We did sweats for this one. But
okay.
The biggest question post-game was, why is there no snack? So this is all thrown together. Nobody
you didn't prepare a Capri Sun fudge round situation?
I'm running the whole squad. I mean, that's like a parent thing. But nobody did that yet?
You get like a mom to coordinate that? You didn't think about that?
I did think about it, but again, I'm worried about what are the rules? How many players per team?
So like, who's the team?
The halves? We don't really have one. I mean, again, people are still finding their roles here. This whole thing was put together very fast. It was a hasty hiring process. A lot of people on the alumni board are pissed off thinking we made a mistake.
Danny was hired to be a coordinator, and then no one wanted the head coaching job, so they slid
Danny Zorn a little bit.
Danny Zorn over to the head job.
It was a tough debut.
That's kind of the coach's thing, though. Like, aren't you the kind of guy, like, you're the coach. Like, you're the head of the operation. You should be the one assigning a team mom, or maybe you take those duties in your own hands.
I am not an assigner. I'm also not responsible enough to go get whatever snack and, like, pay attention to who can't have gluten and, like, can we be near a tree nut or is there a pecan
made in the factory? I think what you do is you have a quick meeting after a practice where you go, hey, over here, listen up, guys. Hey, so we got a game coming up against this annoying Maryland team or whoever you're playing. I need someone to coordinate snacks for the kids. We're looking for a little Capri Sun, maybe some fudge round, something delicious that Grant would like. Definitely not Star Crunch because those suck.
Okay.
Who would like to do that? And then you wait, and then somebody goes, oh, I'll do it.
I'll do it.
Yeah, you got to do one of those things.
I just don't feel like that's my place. I'm just here to instruct kids.
I'm trying to help out who's the coach.
Well, that's now I'm telling grownups what to do. That doesn't feel right to me. That's like, I'm happy to tell the kid, like, hey, left midfielder means you're in the middle of the field, but on the left side. Like, we can work there.
This sounds a little bit like a Ron Rivera situation where a lot of things are slipping through the cracks and you don't think they're supposed to be your job.
Well, hopefully there's no federal agents raiding my facility on a Friday when there's nothing I could be doing.
You're getting your car washed?
Yeah, get the car washed.
I thought that it was weird that Emmanuel Forbes was inactive yesterday at your soccer game.
Well, he would have been.
He couldn't help the boys?
No, I'd have sat his butt right on the bench.
The Beltway Blitz comes your way next. Jay Gruden's on the show at 5 o'clock today, the Monday after. That was gross. Just a bad loss to the Cowboys. We're G&D.
Whatever we decide to do this week, we're going to decide to do.